Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 23rd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, there's a new bill on the Hill that would increase the number of dollars headed for agricultural research. Market analysts say there will be an influx of Jamaican ethanol in the United States. Yaman. And Keith Collins at USDA says bonk to the food v. fuel debate. It's crops for fuel. And Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll take you for a ride on the old BNSF. Okay, that's not true. What we'll do is explore how the BNSF Railway expects to ship more grain out of the Midwest to feed cattle ranchers in Texas and ethanol plants in California. It all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Want to review something you heard on the Closing Market Report? Then AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts are for you. Get all our ag programming delivered daily to your computer. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the red podcast link in the right navigation window. Follow the simple instructions and you will never miss a Closing Market Report again. You can also subscribe to the pre-opening and opening market reports and our flagship show, Commodity Week. AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. It's your marketing advantage.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
At 2 o'clock Central Time on this Friday afternoon, USDA released its latest March cattle on feed report. It says on feed at 96%, the average guess at 96.3, placed in February at 104, average guess at 102.5, and marketed in February at 107, the average trade guess at 105.6. In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at 461.5, off 5.5 cents today. July futures down 5.5 at $4.75. From the corn pit, May contract at 403.25, down 6.25. July down 5.75 at 415.25, and September's were off 3 at $4.10. December contract for your harvest month at 409.75, up 0.25 for the day. May soybeans at 769.5, down 2.25. July at 485.25, down 2.75. And August at 792.25, down 2 cents. November beans at 813. They were down 2.25 today. Bean meal futures May contract 219.30, off $4.10. May bean oil at 31.96. That's up 68 for the day. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, March feeder cattle at 104.35. They were 25 higher for the day. And the April lean hogs at 63.57.5 were down 22.5 cents. Outside markets, crude oil gaining 56 cents at $62.25 for the May. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,484. And it's up just over 23 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hey, welcome back, Todd.
Hey, thanks much. Let's talk about this marketplace as we ended up the week. You know, the beans were off today, but that's really not the big story for them because their weekly trade was up anywhere between 16 cents in the May. November's at 19.5, finished at 18. Higher. They finished at 18.813 for the week. And I think as I walked in, I saw a chart up on the screen that Dave Dickey had up, said the November 08 contract had made a new contract high today.
Yeah, I think that really spells the vast majority of what happened in beans this week as the funds came in and bought the back end. We were on the phone a lot this week with Chicago talking about that with them and asking them what is up there, you know, why are they doing that? And the best answer we got, two of them, I guess, is that, number one, there is some fear that there's going to be, believe it or not, another shortage of acres in some of these people's mines in South America because of ethanol production being stimulated and ethanol demand, and also production next year here in the United States. I have a hard time believing that really means a lot right now, and that's really not a very good reason for us. I think it's probably more an issue that the funds and the spreading that they have tended to do the last few months allows them to be kind of the 800- or 900-pound gorilla in those back-end futures because no one stands in their way and there's not a lot of liquidity, so they pretty much can do whatever they want in the back-end futures. And we saw this a long time ago in the cheddar cheese market where the traders would get into the futures and the back-end futures, especially for cheddar cheese, and they could get in, but they couldn't get out. It was kind of like a roach motel. So the funds are playing a pretty dangerous game, but they're big enough and they have enough diversification. They may come out of it just fine. But, yeah, you translate the Novo 8 gains back into the front end, and it pretty much explains a lot this week.
Yeah, that high actually at 841.5 in the Novo 08, and I think that is the contract high. I'd have to
It is.
Yeah. So it went pretty, it had a pretty good gain for the week. But, you know, as you were talking about that, I was thinking, and I'm assuming these are some of the things that you're looking at, is that we've got awfully large supplies around the globe of soybeans, and 08's not all that far off in order to have to use so much to be, to become short of supply here. Do you think it would be possible at all?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely cut the carryover down. Now, the question is how much in 07? And the other question that's very hard to get a beat on and an answer to is if these bean prices stay at a relatively high level like they are now or continue to go up if the corn and wheat make another leg higher, how much will China be in? Will their demand start to slip? And our expectations are that China is trying to cool their economy and it's going to be pretty hard for them to go ahead and increase their demand as prices go higher. But and that's where it goes back to the cash market. We talked about it briefly this morning. The basis for corn and beans this week have really shown a lot about where the cash market is and where the supply side is as far as where the supplies are at. The people out in Iowa and Nebraska and Minnesota are dealing with anywhere from 65 to 90 cent basis levels in beans. Those same locations are, it's probably a third of that for corn on the basis levels. Even places like Louisville right along the Ohio River, it's dealing with the 48 under basis on beans, whereas it's only 27 under on the corn right now. And so that's probably the most skeptical issue at hand here. I think the best thing the producers can probably look at right now is try and weed through this tall grass and say, okay, where's my long better placed at? Well, our view would be the paper product is the better place. The cash in the bin is not going to return for you as long as stocks are high, what you would like or what we think the paper product or the artificial position on the board will probably return for you, especially if you're a bean bull and think it's going into, double digits. You know, some are saying $12, $14 beans this year. That's a real stretch given our supplies, but if it's going to happen, we think it's, almost certainly going to happen on the paper side of the market, and that cash will fight it all the way up, much like the wheat market last year.
Let's switch gears a bit and talk a little bit about the corn market. Do you have any concern at all at this point about ethanol imports and those displacing, I don't know whether they'd even be displacing, but they coming in to fill the gap where production hasn't been met in the United States just yet?
Well, and
what that might mean for a very large corn crop if it were to come to fruition this fall?
If you walk through that first issue, if you walk through the issue of ethanol imports, given that the tariff is going to last through 2009, if the demand is not met, you've got to believe that RBOB, unleaded, and ethanol prices are extremely high. You know, you're talking probably $2.20 to $2.40 a gallon for ethanol, like a rack price ethanol in Des Moines, Iowa. And so it's extremely lucrative for the domestic manufacturer, and that doesn't do anything but chew up more corn demand. It will, though, at the same time, encourage imports. And so when you get an import increase, especially when you have a tariff like we have, it's going to be likely due to, like you say, increased demand, supply shortfall, and that's going to be very, very profitable for the domestic ethanol industry. So you don't have much of a fear there of ethanol production going down domestically if you increase imports, especially in the short term. The second issue of the bigger corn in the supply side, that's a huge issue. I think that's obviously what the market's trading right now, and we're going to know a lot more in about 5 or 6 days, and then we're going to know a heck of a lot more in about 20 days, when we actually get the planting weather underneath us. I think, though, that can be said, when we talk about beans on the one hand and the supplies, we can say the exact converse for the corn, that you're dealing with a situation where it's going to be extremely hard to build those world supplies. It's going to be extremely hard to build the U.S. supplies, and there is still room for increased corn-blended ethanol demand, upwards of 12 to 14 billion gallons is the latest data that I think most of us would agree on. and the timeline for the cellulosic to come on board or something else that's a viable commercial alternative is about 4 years away at the best. So you've got a number and a timeline that corn-blended ethanol is going to increase in demand. At the same time, it's going to be hard to replenish and already depressed or pulled down stocks number in world corn and coarse grains.
So bottom line, these two markets for me. On the soybean side, you just soon not hold the cash and be paper trading that on
Correct.
The idea that it could go to the upside, but you're not convinced that that's the thing. Is that
right? That's right. Correct.
And
yep.
On the corn side, where do you stand?
Well, you know, the biggest thing with corn has been the spreads this week, and today it played out again. The commercials bought the July and sold the Dece earlier in the week when we got down to about 4 cents inverted market. They let go of those. It's reports on the news wires that they sold a lot of that. Other than that, it was very slow active activity. Volume was very light, except in the corn spreads and the meal oil spreads. So if I take today and then I look at the rest of the week, it pretty much all adds up to no one seriously wants to take a long position in corn until the report comes out because of all these numbers and these big, huge corn acreage numbers that people are throwing out. They're not looking so much at weather yet. They're not looking at the fact that maybe soft red winter wheat acres won't be torn up to be planted to corn because July wheat's back up there at a decent price and weather may not let them do it. They're not looking at ideas that China's going to import 9 million tons of corn like came out today on the news wires and the market just completely faded that, said, we don't believe any of that. We're going to wait for the report numbers. So really corn is kind of stymied and slowed down. The spread reflects that. Our view is, don't look at this week's trade. Let's go back to next week. The report estimates will be coming probably out from our contacts at Dow Jones. They'll be coming out around Tuesday afternoon at the earliest, Wednesday morning at the latest. So that's probably when the real trade begins, and we'll see if people start to unwind their short corn positions, Todd. Mm-hmm. So our mindset is hold off, don't sell any corn. Let's wait and see what the middle of next week brings us, and we'll also get a real good picture of how the next week and a half of weather is going to play out because unlike last year, The Iowa-Minnesota areas were running a drought on the long-term monitors. This year they're running saturation and heavy moisture levels. They're not going to get planted nearly on time like they did last year, you know, in respect to each other. So you've got some issues out there that the market's avoiding, we think. So let's keep your powder dry and let's not sell any more corn yet.
One quick set of numbers to go through the on-feed report out for cattle. On March 1 at 96, placed in February at 104, marketed in February at 107. Those are all to varying degrees within the trading range. Any comment there?
The trade was looking at the marketing's number real key because we've had a run-up in cash cattle. The marketing's number was on the top end. That says that's good demand. We suspect the cash will start out pretty strong next week. How the cash actually trades Monday, Tuesday will be key for what the week's trend is.
We appreciate it much.
Bob, nice to have you back, sir.
Thank you.
Take care.
Mike Zuzlow is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, Ed Kieser, Steve Hilberg will join us to take a complete look at the ag forecast for the two-state region. Up next, your agricultural newscast with Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, Missouri Republican Senator Kit Bond and Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin of Iowa have introduced the National Institute for Food and Agriculture Research Act of 2007. The measure would boost the federal investment in ag research. The senators say the investment will keep America's farmers and ranchers competitive in the global marketplace and ensure consumers continue to have access to a safe, affordable, and nutritious food supply. Analysts say they expect a significant increase in U.S. imports of Jamaican ethanol during the next 2 to 4 years. But the ethanol will not originate in Jamaica, but rather in Brazil. Jamaica is expanding over the next 3 years its ethanol dehydration industry to a capacity of 270 million gallons a year. Jamaica processes wet ethanol from Brazil and then exports it to the U.S. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Energy says that U.S. ethanol imports are climbing once again, with imports in January averaging around 33,000 barrels, or 1.39 million gallons per day. DOE says that's up 4% from December's import level. USDA chief economist Keith Collins says he has a different spin when it comes to discussions of food and fuel.
I don't think about using food for fuel. I think about using crops for fuel. And I say that because using crops for non-food uses has been an objective of agriculture for a long, long time. Henry Ford built a car out of plastic made from soybeans a long, long time ago. We've been trying to utilize agricultural commodities and industrial uses for decades precisely because of the productive capacity of American agriculture has been so great, it's often overwhelmed demand and created lower prices. That's why we have this elaborate system of price and income support programs at USDA. So it's not a new thing to use crops for fuel.
Collins made his remarks during an energy roundtable at Purdue University on Wednesday. Purdue University chemical engineers say they are developing a new process for producing liquid fuels from biomass that has the potential to provide all the fuel needed for the entire U.S. transportation sector. They claim that when perfected, the process will make it possible to produce three times the volume of biofuels from the same quantity of biomass. Underwriters Laboratories says it is close to completing standards to judge the safety of equipment that dispenses E85 gasoline. UL says it expects to publish certification requirements for E85 gas pumps by the end of the year. 14 farm state senators have sent a letter to UL complaining that the certification process is taking too long. South Dakota Senator John Thune.
They, I think, believe that for some reason that the ethanol has a corrosive effect on some of the components that go into the pumps. The truth is that there hasn't been any evidence to that effect. And so what we are essentially asking them to do is if there are things, tests that they need to run, do that, get it done. But they shut these down now as of October of last year, and it literally has just put a complete damper on any additional infrastructure being built or any additional pumps being installed.
Thune says Underwriters Laboratories has created an unnecessary barrier to blending higher rates of ethanol. And the Agricultural Secretariat of Argentina projects a record soybean crop. Its monthly crop report says Argentine farmers will harvest 45.6 million metric tons of soybeans. Argentina's previous high was 40.6 million metric tons in the 2005-2006 growing season. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Tomorrow at 11:30, you can hear that program right here on the radio station. Our guest for Commodity Week, Chris Hurt, ag economist at Purdue University. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up off our website tonight at willag.org just after 6 o'clock Central Time. Well, up next, the BNSF Railway is investing heavily in agriculture. We'll hear a report on the infrastructure upgrades the company will make in the next 2 years and how it hopes to capitalize on the ethanol boom. BNSF Railway resulted from the merger of the Burlington Northern and the Santa Fe lines back in 1995. It can trace its history still back 150 years and through some 390 different rail lines. Today, the freight line covers some 32,000 route miles with 6,300 locomotives and about 220,000 cars. 9% of the railway's business is developed from agriculture. Ann Erickson is the director of feed grains at BNSF. She says her company is in the process of making a large additional commitment
to that sector.
BNSF is very committed to ag. We're the only railroad investing as heavily in new covered hoppers. We've got 4,000 coming on in the next 2 years.
Those covered hopper cars will haul mostly wheat and corn. BNSF serves the nation's major growing regions. It moves the grain out of the Midwest.
We're a West Coast railroad. It'll be to West Texas, grain to Mexico, grain to the PNW for export, grain to California.
That grain to California is an interesting point as it pertains to ethanol, which, by the way, BNSF hauls in tanker cars. But Ann Erickson says she'd prefer to move the corn. That's primarily because it takes three hopper cars of corn to make one tanker car of ethanol. You get the point. Corn is more profitable for the railway to haul as freight because there's, well, more of it. Anyway, BNSF wants to haul corn to California, where it will be turned into ethanol, and big dairy herds can use the DDG byproduct.
Well, at BNSF, we see in the next 2 to 3 years that we'll have over 1 billion gallons of ethanol produced at shuttle destinations on our line.
BNSF will deliver the corn to those destinations and backhaul the DDGs. They'll also move the ethanol. One other note on the railway, on the potential glut of corn that could develop in the Midwest at harvest should farmers plant a record number of acres of the crop. BNSF is confident it will make cars available, see those 4,000 new hoppers, and that it can quickly move them to destinations in the Southwest and the West.
We run 110 car units. They load in 15 hours. They discharge in 15 hours. So we really see that we have the capacity and the ability to handle a heavy harvest push if it comes.
The BNSF, of course, hauls much more than grain. One other ag product it carries is fertilizer, enough to service a field the size of Kansas. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market, as he does each and every Friday, is Bruce Boster, the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, where he serves as the general manager of the 7 East Central Illinois locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Looking forward, actually, to having you in studio this evening to record Commodity Week. Thanks for coming in on short notice. We appreciate that.
No problem. Looking forward to it.
It'll be fun to have you, Chris Hurt, a couple of other folks in studio, and we'll put that on the air tomorrow at 11:30 Central Time. On the radio station by 6 o'clock tonight on the website if you'd like to hear it. But we need to talk about the cash grain market at this point. Heard a little bit about trains and their ability to move grain later in this year. How is basis for you holding up on the train side as well as to the river as you watch it?
Well, really two different worlds out here on trains right now. Our basis here on the CNIC has been sliding away, and kind of the whole Gulf complex has been weak. We've seen good weekly export sales, but those with the higher ocean freight have been predominantly out of the Pacific Northwest. So those PNW trains are relatively good basis levels, especially on the BNSF, UP to a lesser extent. Now, when you get to the Eastern Belt roads and the stuff feeding the Gulf, our basis has been weak. So we've been sliding away on the basis this week where the numbers have been pretty good going west.
And what are the reasons?
I would say ocean freight is probably the big thing. Export sales have been concentrated in corn, and they've been concentrating to those Pacific Rim countries. It makes a lot better fit when ocean freight is high to take it out of the Pacific Northwest.
So Iowa and those folks to the west have been the beneficiary then?
They've been the beneficiary to it. You've seen higher basis levels. They have been, of course, competing more with ethanol use out in some of those Western Belt shippers. We've got a few BN train loaders in Illinois, and those probably have the best basis levels in the state right now. If you're looking at the Gulf, going down to that market, we've been kind of picking up the leftovers, and from the basis, it looks like it.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 376 at Paxton on nearby corn, 374 for new crop, beans, 732 and 784, respectively.
We'll see you in a couple of hours.
We'll see you.
All right, Bruce Bostard is the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Friday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg will join us from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here in Champaign County. Right now, it's time for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. An East Central Illinois lawmaker says the current makeup of the University of Illinois' Board of Trustees was implemented to serve the interests of elected officials. Mahomet Republican Chapin Rose is co-sponsoring a bill that would make the trustees elected rather than appointed and increase the number of downstate members. Rose notes there are currently just two trustees from outside the Chicago area on the board. Trustees were last chosen by voters in 1994. Since then, they have been appointed by the governor. An Urbana man has drowned while trying to help stranded motorists in the Florida Panhandle. Officials in Miramar Beach say Scott Johnson died after he went into the water on a beach to help four people who were in distress on a raft. Johnson's death was one of two along the coastline yesterday, an area notorious for drowning deaths. A federal judge in Florida has refused to dismiss terrorism charges, support charges against alleged Al-Qaeda operative Jose Padilla. U.S. District Judge Marsha Cook today rejected defense claims that the former Chicago gang member's 3.5 years in custody as an enemy combatant violated his constitutional right to a speedy trial. Testimony continued today in the case against two fired state workers accused of rigging the hiring process for politically connected candidates. The lawyer for Don DeFreitas and Michael Casey says he doesn't need to call witnesses in the Civil Service Commission hearing because the state's evidence is weak. The two also were dismissed for failing to cooperate with a Blagojevich investigation into hiring. And a Northwestern University geologist says he has evidence that the New Madrid Fault is cold and dying. Seth Stein says the New Madrid could be running out of steam and that the small recent quakes are just lingering aftershocks of the great 1811-1812 tremors. The fault line runs from southern Illinois to northeastern Arkansas and produces hundreds of small quakes a year. Other experts say they doubt Stein's theory. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast across the Midwest by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Weather's been wet this week. Will it continue that way through the weekend?
Yep, it looks like it's going to stay wet. In various ways, though. We're not going to have a continuous rainfall, but it does look like the threat for rain will be there, not just this weekend, but through most of next week, off and on. Obviously, we've been very wet today so far. We had some significant rainfall in north and north central Illinois. Radar indications showing that perhaps as much as 6 inches of rain, possibly in isolated areas of Ford, Iroquois, Kankakee County, but certainly possibly 4 to 5. Ground truth as of 7 a.m. this morning showed generally almost 1.5 to 2 inches of rain from Tazewell and Peoria County across Livingston and McLean and up toward Kankakee, Marshall, Putnam County. So that area up there is really wet. Down here in the central part of the state, we were skirted on the heavier rain, but we've still managed to pick up a half inch to almost an inch in places. So we'll get a little bit of a break tonight and tomorrow, and then another wave probably moving through northern Illinois during the later part of tomorrow, which could bring some substantially heavy rain up there. And then a little break into Sunday, and then more widespread showers and thunderstorms probably on Monday into Tuesday.
No, obviously it's been wet, going to stay wet. There's a lot, and I get some kick out of watching the market try to analyze just how wet it is and how, frankly, early we are, at least in this part of the world, for the planting season, although I've seen it when corn's been done by April the 8th or thereabouts. Any real reason to worry just yet? It seems to me that the March winds and the warmer weather could dry things out pretty quickly on the topsoil.
Yeah, if we got a week of warm, dry weather, that could certainly take care of a lot of this. The problem is right now, even the medium-range models are really showing quite an active weather pattern into the first week of April, which means occasional showers and thunderstorms. And how widespread that is, of course, depends. It gets harder and harder to pinpoint those type of things this time of year. But it looks like it's going to stay a rather active, i.e. possibly stormy, weather pattern for the next week to 10 days. So There's probably some in back of the mind concern right now, but you know, as you mentioned, it wouldn't take very long for some warm, dry, windy weather to dry things out, and you know, in a matter of days, everybody's in the field and getting done.
Well, we appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Okay, Todd.
And that's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning when Chris Hurt will be our guest on Commodity Week at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. You can hear that this evening at willag.org. That's willag.org on the web just after 6 o'clock. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.